Like, literally done a capture with my webcam, not moved it, imported it as the background, put the green screen on, and then be like, can you tell? And the answer is, yeah, because it's just shit. It's just like, what if reality was shit?
Good, good. Yeah. We should start episode then. What a lovely cold open to Tanked Up, episode 404. I'm going to be host Ben here with Adol.
Hey, episode not found. Just, we have to make that joke.
Oh, yes. Oh.
It's going to be the title. I know it's going to be the title.
Good, good. Yeah.
No. Unless we come up with enough quips that we can make the generic website joke not worth it. New challenge.
We'll see. We'll see how well we get through. As we, you know, breezed over saying hello to you, Lucy. Have you got a beer? Are you drinking this evening?
Oh, straight from skip hello, straight to drink some beer, Lucy.
Oh, no, you're muted. That's why we can't hear you. That's why I feel like we skipped over you.
That is probably why.
There we go. That's why.
Yeah, okay.
Apologies. Hello. Apologies. Yes, I am here and I am drinking. And Ben, it's one of your favourite breweries. Ooh. It's Atom.
Nice.
They've done a collaboration with Junk Soul Smothered. Okay. Who, I mean, could be a band. We did zero prep for this, so I have no idea they are.
Junk Soul.
Mm-hmm. Smothered.
Junk Soul Smothered. It's a vegan restaurant, Lucy.
Oh. No, joking.
A vegan restaurant in Beverly. I don't know where the fuck Beverly is. No, just Beverly.
Knight, Wolverhampton.
Beverly is in Beverly, near Hull.
Oh, even worse. Yep. Okay, so this is Cortex from Juicy. It's a Juicy IPA, 6%. The amount of vegans and people from Hull that I've insulted have just instantly clicked off. it's got a bit of flavour text. In plants, the cortex is the tissue of unspecialised cells lying between the epidermis, surface cells, and the vascular, or conducting, tissues of stems and roots. Continuing with the science lesson, cortical cells may contain stored carbohydrates or other substances such as resin, latex, essential oils, and tannins.
Okay.
And it says nothing about the actual beer. But it has nice, you know, the chloroplasts or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's cells. Cool. Mm. With the cowboy.
Yeah, there's a cowboy. Well, a skeleton cowboy in the middle.
Nice.
I don't know what this beer is. I saw Atom. I saw Juicy and I picked it up. So.
Oh, I haven't had a beer from Atom for a very long time.
Yeah, me neither.
Currently on their website looking at beers. You're like, oh, that brewery. Amazing. Let's buy some beers. Yeah. Nice. I will just say I am drinking, but I am drinking a beer I had a couple of weeks ago, the Wipe and True Collide Dipper.
Again.
Because I bought a few beers yesterday. We had some people over for the evening, brought a few beers yesterday, didn't get around to this one, and haven't had a chance to go anywhere. So
I also picked up another one this week, which is the third time I've picked up that beer.
I'm jealous of you both. I literally haven't had it, and you guys are now doubling down in not even just in general, in front of me. You're like, oh yeah. So the whole point of this podcast is we have new beers every week, but actually let's just talk about how we're both having this multiple times.
I'll pick one up for you for when you're around next time, because the shop around the corner does three Wiper and True beers for 11 quid.
Oh, that's
so
really good.
And the double IPA is included in that, so I can just buy three of them for 11 quid.
Oh, God, yes. I still have a beer for you, Lucy.
Oh, yes. The
Roquefort.
Age that puppy.
Nice. Oh, yeah, it's fine. It's already aging since 2020, I think, is when it was like originally released. Yeah, yeah. It's sitting on top of my fridge. It's fine.
Good, good. what are you drinking, Adam?
So, question. Are we having one or two beers?
I only have the one.
I can have two because this is already going down very quickly.
Okay. Well, in that case, let's go with the Osterfest beer.
Ooh.
Ein Festlicher Genhus. It's, oh God, I should have looked this up. It's Hassan Augsburg. It's a fest beer. I've had it for about a month, but we just, between podcast scheduling, etc. I knew the backstory when I bought it. Mm-hmm. But it's basically a very German, let me just quickly. It's a specific type of beer, which is a fest beer. It is
like Oktoberfest beer.
Yeah, it's a half liter in a bottle. It is 5.8%. Dieses Osterfest beer wird speziell.
I don't recognize the label.
Yeah, I'm trying to double check. It's Hassenbrau.
Right.
I believe. Let me just. Yeah, so it's a 5.8% fest beer. It should be
5.8. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, have several of those, and you're out for the count.
Yeah,
that's the whole point of Oktoberfest.
Yeah, so I'll pour this, and if I can find an English translation of their flavor text, I'll read it out in a bit. But I mean, it's what you would expect, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's no longer available for purchase at onlygoodbeer.com.
Oh.
Well. Maybe next year. Yeah. I will move on to the atom whilst you're looking.
Yeah, yeah, do it.
Yeah, I've already just started drinking it because it smelled delightful.
Mm.
Just fruity as all hell. Getting like melon, like mango, maybe a bit of passion fruit, guava, all those nice tropical notes.
Nice.
And it is juicy. It's so smooth. Oh. Ooh. I'm in my happy place. Do a little happy dance. Yeah, it's just really easy to drink. And yeah, those really tropical fruity flavours just carry on into the taste. It's not overly sweet. It's got an underlying sweetness, but it's not, you know, when you think of all those tropical fruits, you might think of a bit of a sweet overload, but it just pairs it back slightly a bit. Slightly piney, resinous finish on the end, mixed with I'd say light bitterness. Doesn't really have a bitter finish, but I think that resin and the pine is what counteracts that sweetness from the fruit, just to make it a bit more balanced and a bit more easy to drink. You see, instead of telling me about, you know, plant cells, I wish you would have said what hops were in it.
I was going to ask, because it sounds sort of maybe Nelson-y, Simcoe-y, something in that
variety. Like Motueka almost.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to know, but...
Because I'm currently on their web shop. Looking at beers. It does tell me on here, it's brewed with our favourite hop combination of Citra, Nelson Sauvon, and Talus.
Ooh, I'm glad I called the Nelson.
So you're spot on, Adil, yeah. Yeah, the Citra comes through in all those tropical notes, and yeah. That
Talus is what I'm less familiar with. What are the... Do you guys have a good read on what Talus, presents as in Earth?
It's definitely one that's newer. That's been. Maybe I should check my book.
Arbor were brewing. Oh yes, you do have the book.
Yeah,
Arbor
brewed. That's great.
Arbor brewed a Talus beer last year, I think, or started last year. Wonderland in Talus or something like that.
Oh, cool.
Very pretty book. It's one that's maybe probably been around longer than I've realised, but one that has really I feel is a bit newer.
Like stone fruity, maybe.
Yeah, you're getting those, you know, I'd say probably more tropical than stone fruits, but I'm sure somebody else's palate would definitely pick up, like,
peach. It's mango, it's both.
Oh, yeah. So, Beer Maverick has it as a mostly aroma dry hopping hop that's grapefruit, floral, stone fruit, and potpourri.
Oh.
In that order.
Because this don't think this has Talus in it, and I think this is a couple of years old, so it may just be a more one that's come into more of the zeitgeist more recently.
It's definitely newish.
Yeah.
Previously called HBC692, the newly named Talus is an aroma hop for whirlpool and dry hopping additions. Sorry, I just love the... It's secretly so, like, obviously branded science, but, like, craft beer still, like, knows when to, like, oh, this is getting popular? Get rid of the stupid name with, like, a... Like,
yeah, get rid of the numbers.
Yeah, some sort of, like, fake noun or string and then some numbers. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's whatever combination they put in, it's really good. It's got, did it say oats in it? Yeah, it's got oats in it. So, it definitely has that, like, kind of creamy texture and mouthfeel to it. Yeah, it's just really good. I think I've passed halfway the can already. So
wow, nice.
That's how good it is, yeah.
Oh, so you weren't kidding when you were saying you're going to have a second beer, probably.
Yeah. I'll probably get it whilst Ben's talking about the Wiper and True beer for the seventh time.
Yeah. Well, just to mention, it is as it was 2-3, maybe even 4 weeks ago. Now, something like that, perhaps. About a month. It's lovely. It's lovely and soft and juicy. Mm-hmm. It's got that lovely kind of slight bitterness to its finish.
Yeah.
Nose, good mouthfeel. I think as we were sort of saying, why don't Wiper and True do more double IPAs when this is the output that they have for it?
Mm-hmm.
I could see, again, I don't know whether we mentioned this last time, but you could definitely hit a can and then just be satiated. You know, another one might start to be a little bit chewy, a little bit cloying, perhaps, to sort of continue on. It's a great beer after you've had maybe a couple of sort of lighter beers, you know, whether that's Wiper and True or not, or a couple of pails or something like that, at sort of 4.5%, 5%, 6%.
Like a mid-session, finishing off end of session.
Finishing off with this. It's almost sweet enough. It's not quite on that kind of pastry side, but it's just sweet enough that it's edging that kind of way. And it could a little bit bigger, and you would say it was like a pastry IPA or something like that instead, or a pudding pudding beer.
There's a cat by my feet stepped on, sorry.
So yes, I won't say any more about that. We'll come back round to you, Adolf.
Yeah, so
what was the actual name of it? It was an Oktoberfest beer.
It's an Osterfest beer, not an Oktoberfest beer, an Oster. So it's actually Easter, I think, probably. Given that the way German is, but also the telltale rabbit.
Yeah, because I was getting confused because like Oktoberfest, they only put out like certain ones from certain breweries. So
yeah, no, this is Osterfest.
Didn't recognize it. Yeah, okay. That makes more sense.
Oh, now I can't. Now I've got all my intuitions on German wrong, but it's Oster with no umlauts or anything. I believe it's like a spring Easter beer. It is.
Yeah, it translates as Easter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great for this time of year because
it's like Easter.
No, because it's like a little sweet. It's quite effervescent. Mild nuttiness. So it's getting like a bit closer to like lager vibes in that sense. So it's like quite like springy.
Mm.
But it's got a nice undertone of bitter, like light bitter for a German beer. Obviously nothing like probably what you just had, Lucy. it's really drinkable. It's got some nice depth. The malts are doing some light work in the sense of it's like a, how do I put this? It's not malt light, but the malts aren't doing a lot. Like they're just like kind of there. They're just being like, I am a beer. I am a German beer doing German beer malty things.
Yes.
I'm not doing more than one of them, but what I'm doing, I'm doing really well. I'm not overstaying my welcome. I'm definitely here. That makes sense. And so you've got that. And I think the, was it 5.8%? Just giving just enough alcoholic sugar to round it out. This could go kind of either way. I had a few pints of... Shiny, actually. They're Nelson Savon. I wish I remember the name, what it was. But on cask at the Hop Knockers. Hop Knockers installed the cask earlier today. So I might be drinking this a bit slower just because I've had a couple beers. But this could be, this would be like a beer I would easily drain in other circumstances, just because it's really easy to drink and it's fine and nice. But what I like about it is that maltiness is giving just enough depth that I can still taste it right now. It's been like 20, 30 seconds since I had a sip. And because I'm like, had a couple beers, I'm not like itching to like drink my beer. And so this might, this, I could easily like nurse this half liter bottle. Just because I'm a couple beers in, which is a nice type of beer to have, because I think if I had it as my first beer of the night, I'd drink it a bit quicker, but like I would still, it'd be fine. So like, it's a nice little like role player. It can be in, it could be the beginning of your session or mid session. I obviously not probably the end of the session, like Ben's beer, but like, that's a nice little thing to have for a slightly higher kind of light beer. That makes sense. Like it's 5.8%, but it's playing the like light ale close to lager role.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can I mention a lager that I drank yesterday?
Yeah, of course.
Carl's yeah, it's the Pastore. It's called Malto Dry, and it's a rice lager. It's been doing the rounds. Everyone said it was really good, and it is actually very, very good. It's like one of the cleanest beers that I've had.
Mm.
Like, you know, it reminds me of very much like a Czech Pilsner. Just like that kind of...
Oh, like really, really clean,
crisp, and refreshing. Yeah, just like, you know, like it came from some spring in the Czech Republic, in Prague or something. Yeah, if you can check it out,
that sounds please do, because
it's very good. Yeah. I was like, oh, I haven't had a beer like this in ages. And it was just so good.
Again, Pastore just can seem to be able to turn their hand at anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Pastore, like they've been getting into like these odd sour combinations that, you know, I get a bit taken aback by, sort of like Vault City. It's just like, whoa, what are you doing? Like some of their like first beers, like they're just like their original house saison is just like really good, and it seems like the they're following the trend of, oh, how many weird things can we put on the front of the can and still call it a sour? And it's like, sort of moving away from what I want. But this rice lager, which you're just thinking, yeah, this is, seems obviously a lot of, you know, craft went into it, but it just seems a bit more pared back and a bit more, in quotes, simple than some of the sours that they're putting out in cans. But yeah, I think it has like sake in it and stuff like that. And it's just so crisp and good. So yeah, check it out if you can. It's doing the rounds, I think.
Is there a goat on the front?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. No, it's actually a is that a swan, some kind of bird, heron, I don't know. An outline of some bird on it.
All right, fair. Okay. Good. Let's, I think, I don't know whether any of us have got any big news to hit, but I know we've all got games to talk about. So if we're maybe hitting some extra beers as well, let's just launch straight into games this week. Would anyone like to take the floor and launch into what they've been playing? Because it's an odd week where we've all got a game to talk about.
Well, I'll quickly hit on a quick one.
I think Lucy has multiple, so why don't we start with Lucy and then maybe finish with Lucy?
Yeah. Whilst I get my second bit. The first one is it's a free game, I believe, and it's called 20 Small Mazes on Steam.
Okay.
20 in numerals, 20.
Is it called?
Yeah, it's just
20 small mazes on Steam, or is it called 20 small mazes and it's on Steam? Because I would really like the niche notion of like, I'm called 20 small mazes on Steam, and then it gets a Switch release because they got popular enough. It's just hijacking. I just really like the idea that they're like, no, we're just gonna do a PC release. Ah, fuck. Well, we can't change the name now. 20 small mazes on Steam, now on Android, like 2025.
Yeah, you could play it on anything, to be fair. It uses your mouse, but it's basically, as it says on the tin, 20 small mazes. And the thing is that they're all overlaid on top of each other.
Yeah,
on like,
that's very cool.
Wait, what?
In one window.
I'm going to look this up.
Yeah, so they're all, you know, disparate mazes. They all, you know, there's 20 of them and they all solve them in different ways. Each one has its own gimmick and mechanic to it. Fundamentally, you are just using like the, no, it's the arrow keys, isn't it, most of the time, just to move like a little dot from the start to the,
oh, like
to the goal in the maze.
If you hit like an intersection, you just hit up if there's an, to move the thing to the next, like, intersection?
Yeah,
if, like, you're not like stopping mid choice point, you're like bumping between, or?
No, they're all, as I say, they're all self-contained. It's just that they're all like, all on the same screen. So say like, oh, you can use your mouse to move one maze out of the way. Just say, I want to come back to that one and do the other one. But they are all layered. But it's like, you're probably going to do it in the order that they're laid on the screen.
But you could like shuffle them up.
Yeah, you could just,
like,
yeah,
it's like a cluttered desk. You could like rearrange the paperwork, but like you still have to get
rid
of
it. That's a great
way
to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, sometimes you have to, there are some cases where it's like, oh, I've got to, solve this maze before I solve another one. It's very rare, but it's like sometimes, you know, things pop up like later on the screen, like, oh, I have to solve this maze because this thing in the background won't make sense until I've solved that maze, and then move on to that maze.
Can you give
little instances of that.
Like,
I wouldn't want to spoil it because there's only like one or two instances where that happens, and it's
so
nice
something
to
in the game
that.
Sort of prioritizes or orders, maybe is a better word. So
So sort of like a, let's say, a combination code to something that can only be found
if you do X then Y.
Yeah, you do a maze first and find out what that combination code is, and then that combination code will therefore unlock another maze. So that's one example. Yeah.
Right, okay. So some of it is just like gating.
Yeah. But it doesn't do it in a, I don't know. They're all fairly simple, and
like what the type of mechanic it was. But it's basically
they all have different ones. Like that one's completely different to like one that really was really charming. Is that the developers? I think their daughter. They got them to design a maze, and that's like basically, you know, a short little D&D-esque. Oh, I have to go and get the sword to, you know, move this goblin out the way and do this and do that. And so each has its own little gimmick.
So,
yeah. And
they're all, so the like, mazes are more complicated than mazes. They can be like
dynamic
as I say, puzzle they all have, mazes.
Yeah, it isn't just start to finish on
it's,
every
it's
single
not like
one
you
of them.
Can just do the like always go left and you'll eventually win.
No.
It's what a maze is.
But most of them
it's
have
really boring.
Different elements of puzzle solving to them. So,
nice.
But yeah, it took me about an hour to finish, and yeah, each one just having its own individual mechanic and little gimmick to it was quite twee and quite charming. And then I finished the game, and I had a big smile on my face, and it was an hour, and it was just like, yeah, this is cool, nice little free thing. I'd recommend anyone try it out. It's really colourful and it's really imaginative, like, you know, having that kind of presentation. As I say, every puzzle is slightly different and has its own mechanic to it, so it just keeps your brain working for that hour, and it's like, oh, this isn't getting boring because this is a whole new different way to solve this maze. And yeah, it's really good. So
nice. Nice. Just having a quick look on the developer/publisher, Fleb, which is a great name.
Great name.
they have another game called RYB, which is just touts itself as a logic puzzle game. Plays like a combination of Sudoku and Minesweeper. It came out in 2016. It's free. It's free on Steam. I've just added both of them to my library.
It's also free. Yep. Yeah, geez. I'm going to add that to my library as well.
Yeah. This looks a lot more cerebral than the mazes. The mazes is just something that, if you know, I just wanted something to tickle my brain for an hour, but still be, you know, mostly relaxing in 20 small mazes.
Nice.
You know, fit the brief. So, yeah.
Good.
What was it called? Perfect. RWB.
20 small maces. And
yeah, and the other one is RYB.
Yeah.
Red, yellow, blue.
I'm just going to install both. They
nice.
Both total to less than 300 megs. Which, to be fair, both of them are... So one's 130 and one's 120-something, which is double a Bellatro, so I mean...
Yeah, I was about to say, that's bigger than Bellatro still, so... it can't be as good.
Yeah. Sounds like bloat to me!
Yeah. There's an update for Bellatro that I want to try out. I've been clean for about 3 weeks now.
Wow! Yeah.
So, yeah. Well,
hey, wait, does that mean you have yet to use... Sorry, you've been clean and you haven't even... You never tried the tag mechanic? The like skip lines?
No. Oh,
God.
I had a hot and heavy time with Bellatro.
Oh yeah, no, I get it, because I have also like bounced for a bit. I know I'll come back. Like,
It's like I've moved away from the slots for a bit. Yeah. Just earning more money to put back into that machine. 61 hours.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that was like over the space of like, I don't know.
I have just shy of 20.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's actually not
I needed to
that,
step away.
Actually, given that you bounced right around when I started.
No, it's still bad. No, try and dress it up. That's, someone would call that a problem.
But as you say, hot and heavy.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's great is, like, it, the loop's... Oh, man, I don't mean to go into another podcast. But, like, the loop is so simple that, like, I don't feel like... Some games, I feel like when I bounce, I'm like, I want to come back. Like, so Elden Ring is a great example of this. Loved the game. Was literally my game of the year. Never finished it. And the idea of going back to it has this, like, because I know I'm just going to fucking die a lot because I'm just don't have the muscle memory because it's been too long. And the longer it takes before I go back, the more likely I'm not going to want to go back because, like, I won't remember anything. I won't remember the world. I won't remember what I wanted to do. And I'll be very bad at the game that wants you to be good at it. Sure. Like, it's such a good game, and when I'm in the depths of it, I don't want to play anything else, but also getting back in the depths has, like, even just contemplating it has been really bad. Bellatro is like the opposite. It's like, because it's roguelike, even you can't even tell, like, if you've taken a couple days off or a week and you go back, you can't even tell if, like, you didn't read a run right or if, like, it was just like you didn't get the right jokers. So, like, you can just lie to yourself and say, yeah, next run will be better. And that's all it takes to reacquaint yourself with all of the mechanics. There's never a feels bad because there's enough randomness, and also it's short.
Yeah. It's why, like, I know that when I get back to it, it'll just be like, yep. But I read the patch notes for the update, and it seems like there's a lot of tweaks.
Yeah.
To, you know, not necessarily adding any many things new, I don't think, but a lot of tweaks to, like, the gameplay, how much cards cost, how rare they are, and how much they appear, and stuff like that. So it seems which is just like, oh, damn. Because it seems so finely tuned already, and I'm just curious as to how these changes are going to change everything. So yeah. We'll see.
I actually watched an interesting YouTube video of, I wish I remember this, one of these, like, deep dive game developer, maybe not developer, but, like, really keen person, Gamer Tools or whatever, like, it's one of those.
Oh, Game Makers Toolkit.
Oh, maybe it was them, yeah, on Bellatro.
Yeah, that's great, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, they were talking about how, it was called, like, Bellatro's, like, cursed something, like.
Yeah.
And the whole point that they were making was, like, they had chats with the developer, and, like, he's this random Canadian, no one really knows who he is. And he basically said, like,
you?
Look, he's actually in Canada. and he was sort of, like, lamenting that, like, some people really, one of the critiques of the game is you don't know what your score is when you like select the cards. And he's like, the game kind of has a rough calculation of this, depending on some of the jokers have like random multipliers, so you can't quite know. But like, he's purposely not giving that information such that you have that like dopamine rush, and that when all the things bing, you're like, oh, I am getting to the point where I'm going to beat the thing. And like, one of the things you learn from playing Blatro enough is when you're, because you have this little section on the scoreboard where it's like the number of chips times a multiplier. And when that goes on fire, that tells you that this individual hand is beating the blind you're on.
Yeah.
And when the fires get bigger and bigger, you're beating it by a lot more. But
you,
like,
don't know that until you've played that.
Right. But the thing is, you also don't know, for a while, you don't even know what causes the fire. You just know you're winning. But it's this hand is beating the blind, is what causes.
I've done calculations. I haven't gone as far as getting an actual calculator, but I have done calculations in my head.
Yeah, and
to get, you know, see a ballpark. Yeah, of
and
what
some people literally streamers and like min-maxers have like Windows calculator open in the game, and so this whole video was like about how you have hidden information in public information, and it's a bad mechanic, or like there's something wrong because you're not giving the information is public, but you're not giving it cleanly. Mm-hmm, and it's just like, it was the first time. So yeah, it was Game Maker's Toolkit, and I'm pretty sure. But, I was just like, you fundamentally don't understand games, like information based games. Like, I know this from board games, especially like things like Magic Gathering, etc. The point is, you don't, just because the information's public doesn't mean it doesn't have a cost if you have to put in your buffer. So there's a difference between, so there's this like gloss people have, and because video games often do it, which is it's public information. So because it's calculatable, it should just be free. And it's negating the opportunity cost of having to think about it. And because if you have to think about these small calculations, it makes the hard calculations harder.
Right.
Yeah, and so the whole point of Bilateral, what I like is, like, on the runs have been most successful, I've known without even, like, I don't need the thing to say you're going to beat this by X points. I know I'm going to breach the barrier because I have a feel for it, because what I'm doing is I'm guesstimating, and I'm, like, my brain is doing rough estimation calculations, and I'm not having to do the thing. But in the very beginning of the game, it's very interesting because on my first few blinds, I almost always do the maths because I actually want the, if I can do it in one hand, I get that extra dollar, and the being the game, that dollar can maybe hit $5, and like,
that's,
but like,
pretty straightforward calculation because it's always like
agreed
straight.
But yeah, and
like
I think
that,
people are extrapolating from that to, oh, so it should be that type of calculation is easy and straightforward, so it should be there all the whole time. It's like, no, you're misunderstanding. Like, the whole point of this game is it's that interplay, but also you don't need it to know. Like, what you need to know is, do I pass this barrier? Because min-maxers are trying to pass this barrier by as much as possible. That's not actually how the game is designed. Mm-hmm. And the game designer has literally said, I want people to have the question mark. And it was just such a weird thing because the YouTube video, again, this, like, I respect the guy from all the other videos I've seen, was just like, this is a flaw, this is a problem. And they're like skating across two types of information. I'm like, no, you're misunderstanding that there's a third type. And it's because there's this entire vector of like
that.
Thinking.
I didn't get that from his video. I was...
Was it the curse of Bilateral?
Was it Mark or something like that? Yeah. And maybe the headline was a bit, you know, more salacious just to get views. But I was... What I got from it is that he's just... positing that's what developers sometimes, you know, it's a push and pull. They don't want you to look at, you know, external things outside of the game. They want to keep you in the game. And it's a push and pull whether that, you know, a mechanic like that, a literal calculator in the game should be included. I didn't get him saying that
it
was a problem.
So the first third of the video, he said that, but then he, like, compared to Binding of Isaac and not knowing the things and people using mods to like learn the things. But this is like a very different comparison. Like, Yes, when the game's brand new and there's no way you can know what this does, the developer wants you to just, like, figure it out. But, like, the original, like, literally Rogue, the original roguelike, the mechanic was upgrade, question mark. Once you do it once, you learn it. And, like, that's exactly what I think Binding of Isaac could have done, given all the complaints. But you, that's a totally different, like, style of mechanic as to what Bellatro's doing, because Bellatro is saying, yes, you could do the maths, but also you don't have to. Like, I think this is that you don't have to. Like, you don't actually need to min-max. You need to get ranges. And, like, playing the game enough gets you the ranges. And, like, it would be a... It would be such a more boring game that I wouldn't have, like, gotten, like, interested in if it just said, pick five cards and says, this is the points you're going to get. No, no, the point is I'm guesstimating. Like, that's the mechanic.
Yeah.
The mechanics sometimes aren't always on the game side. They're in your brain. And, like, the part of Bellatro's mechanic is, yes, so it tells me, generically, a flush is 30 times 4, and my flush has 3 face cards, so that's 30. And a 7, 8, 9. So it's 7 plus 8 plus 9 plus 30. Added to the 30. Times 4. Does that break 600? Yes, probably. And I could do those maths, but the point is, I don't... Like, that's part of the game, is me, like, looking at those things. Yeah. And if I choose to, like, sit down with a pen and paper and jot it down, or Microsoft Excel, I can do that, and the game allows me to do that. But... In some sense, the loop of the game is incentivizing you to not worry about optimizing any individual choice. And if you got the pick five cards, what is the score? You would just click automaton through those things. It changes the game entirely. And I feel like that video
proposing there should be a calculator in the game. Well, I think it was more philosophizing, like,
no, but
where does the developer draw the line? Like, should there be a calculator in the game? Because players are, you know, there was a quote in the video where it's like, where people can optimize something, they will.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, it's just that I was more, I interpreted it as, like, this is a development, like, kind of...
Choice.
You know, choice and philosophy is, like, should we include that in the game, or should we not? And
I thought, like, that's what he was saying, the last half of the video seemed to indicate, he's like, he started to kind of be more critical, and then sort of
I get you with that, because it's like, what's the point of, like, telling you everything that, you know, all the alchemy in Minecraft that's for people to discover on their own. But in the Bellatro's case, where it's literally telling you what the calculation is, it seems like there's no discovery about it, and it's like,
The other thing is, like, Binding of Isaac...
But I agree, I don't think it would be better with the calculator.
I think the whole point is, like, Binding of Isaac has other things going on, and actually, those things, like... The game wants you to learn the interactions between power-ups. And some of them interact poorly, and so you need to figure that out. And so you have an incentive to track those things, and as soon as you have an incentive to track, someone's going to make a mod for it. The difference is, Bellatro, your incentive is to track a zone of passing. But actually, most of the time, I disagree. So basically, I disagree that, like, people who want to do this game a bunch need the, like, exact score, because the game is so well designed that you just need to know, I'm going to pass this threshold. And I actually don't need to know anything past that. And so, like, there might be a mod where you could get some partial information of the maths, but, like, the reason why this game is good is because it's so well designed.
Shows you the calculation. Yeah.
I do
get you. The argument did fall apart where you're comparing it to something that has a discovery in that sense. Maybe if it's like...
But the discovery is totally different from the, like, gameplay.
From actual maps, yes. But it's like, as I say, I think his argument fell apart in that sense, where it's like discovering something is different from, like, actually... The game is calculating, and it's like, that is fact, and it's like, you know, you could do that, and it's like, why doesn't the game give that to me? But it would detract from it.
A lot of board
games. That's the whole point of the dopamine, like seeing that fire when you're not, when you're short, you know, if you don't want to do the map, or even if you do without a calculator, without actually mapping it out, and stuff like, you couldn't do it because when it's like, the there's odds jumper. In it, like one in two chance or one in three chance, it's like, that just wouldn't work anyway.
But like,
would you have, as you say, a range in case, like, these things hit or not?
But so, like, a bunch of board games literally are designed, like, so like most of Settlers of Catan, famous strategic board game, it made strategic board games in like the 90s and early 2000s become a thing. That game, you could technically track a bunch of information because of the way the discard is like viewable. And you don't get to, but like a bunch of these games, you don't get to relook at the discard pile, right? That's one of the gameplay elements. And it's like, well, yes, technically, I could have a piece of paper, or I could just be better at memorizing, and I could track this entirely and have an advantage. But the game is telling you, I'm not trying to make this a min-maxing thing, so you don't get to do this. Mm-hmm. To the point where, like, Catan actually has, in the tournaments, it doesn't let players bring paper. Because it's actually quite close to an open/perfect information game on that discard stuff. But the game designer said, I don't want you to look at the discard piles because I don't want you to try and min-max these things. I want a gap. I think the game worked with the gap. And I feel like this is exactly what was going on with Bellatro, which is different from something like knowing what a power-up is, because that's kind of like a single-player arc. I've now learned these things.
Yeah.
Right? Versus the gameplay is dependent on me having to, like, approximate. Anyway.
It's like actual poker, where it's like the people who are hardcore into it count the cards and everything.
Card counting, yeah, absolutely.
Well, so this, like, so which,
if an ace hits,
this
yay.
Is super interesting about Bellatro, because actually Bellatro, at any point, you can right-click on your deck and see and all the cards that have been discarded, and because you fuck up with your cards, it'll say how many aces of spades you have left. And you're like, oh, I have seven, because you fucked the deck,
and you're doing
right?
The proper
and it turns out the developer, like, in this was actually in that video, the developer talked to their beta testers, and they were like, oh, we want to know this, and it's still allowed because it wasn't doing the main mechanic. It helped you to do the guesstimating, which I thought was so smart. One of the reasons I really like it is because I can right-click on the deck and be like, oh, I really need a flush. I've been, like, just designing towards flush, but how many diamonds are left? Because I have three diamonds and I'm turfing four cards, and if there's only two diamonds left, I'm just going to lose, right? And
you're not playing Bellatro, right, if you don't have a deck of all diamonds.
Correct. But I'm just saying, like, but that's the type of thing that was like, oh, it's super helpful, but it's really interesting that, like, that was brought up as like a, oh, but you get this information. Mm. Like, oh, but this is entirely, like, consistent with what the game wants you to do, which is, like, think about your cards. Think as much about your cards as you want, but then you kind of have to trust your intuition on the jokers. Like, that's Bellatro in a nutshell. So I get
perfect information
on my discards and my draws. I just have to, like, either, like, guesstimate the math or sit there with a pen and paper or Microsoft calculator and be like, yep, I'm going to pass. Yeah. But the best part of the game is you never need to do that latter thing, and the former thing will help you guesstimate the latter thing. I can't imagine that game, especially in the earlier rounds, without being able to check the deck. Like, once I've, like, fucked the deck enough, I was like, oh, I can't actually remember how many hearts do I have, because it really matters if I'm playing a flush game, that it's like, oh, do you have two extra hearts or do you have four extra hearts? And especially when those are those swaps or additions, right? Because then it's like, then the math suck, right? If I have 59 cards and I have five extra hearts, that's way different than I've just killed five clubs for five hearts, right? Anyway,
it was a bit of an odd video of two halves. I think the title on the video was even more like, salacious and a bit like Balatro's bad. Not to that.
Well,
extent,
no, it's Balatro's cursed mechanic or something like that. Anyway, I didn't actually expect that I was going
to. Let's move on from Balatro.
Yes. Yeah. Poor Ben's like, at one point, I'll fucking play this
game.
The
seventh Balatro podcast in a row.
It's the Balatro corner. It's
Balatro year.
Yes.
I mean, this is mostly a critique of like the way we frame videos and critiques. Plus Balatro. I'll give it at least there was two bits. One was the bit that we've dead-horsed, and the other was interesting.
That's the topic for the episode, absolutely. Good. Lucy.
you played a game. It wasn't Balatro.
I was going to come back to beer. I don't wonder if you were ready for your for a second.
I'll go get one. Adil can mention his first, and I'll go get mine.
My beer?
Yeah.
If you want to do that.
If you're ready. Yeah, absolutely.
I'll head off. Be back.
Yep. My second beer is a Bruxellesnes. Yeah. It's from Brussels. It's from Brasserie de la Seine. It's 6.5% Brett. It's a Brussels with Brettomyosin, which I had never had before, and I was super curious, and that's all. Basically Ben at the Hop Knocker, who might be our guest next week.
Oh, nice.
It was just like, you should try this, I think you'll really like it, and that's all I got, so I'm gonna crack this beer.
Perfect. Lucy will return.
Yeah. Oh, shortly. Shit. How?
No, it's exploded.
Yeah. Real bad, actually.
Oh, no.
Given that it sat for like a half hour. Awkwardly, I'm going to go quickly get some towel.
That's fair. That'd be a lovely edit.
Hi.
All right, you're muted, but his beer exploded.
Oh, and I missed it.
Yeah. I mean, it was off air. It was off camera, let's say. Lucy, you went off to get a beer.
I did.
What are you drinking now?
I am drinking one of my favorite breweries. A beer from the smiley face of Baron.
Ooh.
This is like some greyhound looking dog on the cam. Mm-hmm. On the cam. It's called a Long Boy. And it's a... And it's a double IPA, it's 8.4%, and it's a single hop Simcoe beer.
Really?
Quickly, the second tank, the second in the Tank 5 single hop Bipper series, this time with copious amounts of Simcoe hops. 11 grams per litre added to the hop wort, 30 grams per litre added at four stages during and post fermentation. Mm-hmm. Simcoe soup.
Nice.
So, having soup in summer.
And Adam, what are you drinking next?
We think I talked about it, right? It's this.
Oh, yes, you did. Yeah, you mentioned it.
Yeah, I can tell you about it, though, while Lucy does her thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, it's got a lovely, tangy... I mean, it smells like Brett, but a bit more citrusy than just pure Brett. Mm. So, like, tart, a little wild, and I want to say, like, sweet citrus. Clementine more than tangerine.
Hmm.
Just like light note. Oh, and that like sweet citrus is all... Oh, wow. It's all the way through. From the start through the finish, there's this light clementine-y note. Oh, nope. I take it back. It's not light at all. Everything else is faded. I mean, I've had one sip and I'm just getting this clean beer... The Brett's there. I've got like a light, bitter undertone and this sweet citrus overtone throughout the finish. Really interesting.
Nice.
On a bigger second pull, I'm getting a little more depth on the bitterness. The Brett's doing a little more work, but again, it's the Brett and the Clement. Basically, like, this beer is super light, refreshing, but has some depth. I think it's the easiest way to think about it is like a light, medium Brett taste with a very strong, like, clementine citrus overtone. So it's not, like, the main taste, but it's just there. And as the Brett starts to recede on the finish, the clementine kind of comes out a bit more. But ultimately, it finishes a little bitter with this, like, slight tartness. Tart's not the right word. You know what I mean? The Brett finishing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's finishing Brett. But most of the taste has this sweet clementine that is kind of interweaved with it. So, like, you're getting a bit of interplay, but ultimately it ends kind of with that bitterness from the Brett, which I think is ideal because it finishes like a beer. But most of the taste curve is kind of like, oh, yeah, but what if this beer was, like, kind of springy and exciting?
Oh, that sounds
interesting. This is really interesting, yeah. Mm.
Not what I had
expected. Yeah, so, I mean, I know you were off camera. So this is a Bruxellesis. So it's a Brussels beer from Brasserie de la Seine. And it's literally just called their local Brett beer. And I wasn't expecting that, like, citrus, but it's doing so much excellent work with the Brett. It's really good.
Good.
Sounds really good. And yeah. I want it.
Yeah, you should. I'm going to say this is definitely easily drinkable and definitely look out-able, because you should look out for it, and because it's just a very good beer. Especially as we're changing the seasons, this is only going to get, like, more appealing as the days get warmer.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah. Praise the sun.
Lucy, how was your
beer? It isn't.
Ooh, look quite at that fucking thickness.
It's very opaque.
Yeah, I was going to say
it probably looks a bit more yellow.
Oh, okay, yeah. Actually, when you pull it away from the direct light, I can see that there's some translucence to it. But, like, in this light, it looks black, like just like a fucking flat color.
Yeah, I did say soup on the can.
Yeah.
Less fragrant than the last beer. Maybe because it's just like one hop, and I think Simcoe's a bit more understated than like Citra on the nose. But slight lemon, slight orange peel on the nose. Ooh. That is certainly interesting. It kind of has a soupy feel, like mouthfeel, texture almost, but it's like, because it's an 8.4% beer, you're kind of expecting it to have, like, you know, that soupy, thick kind of body to it, but it doesn't. It's kind of strange. I think it has like a kind of like, it tastes like fizzy sweets almost. It's got an effervescence to it, which just like kind of elevates it from being like thick and soupy and dense and viscous into a more thinner, but not in a bad way, like kind of body. It's very strange. Because when you start drinking it and you get in that like texture and mouthfeel, it feels like, yes, this could be like, you know, very dense, very thick, very meaty, but it doesn't have that at all. It's like very, I wouldn't call it light bodied, but medium at the most. It's just very, it just goes down really easily. And it's not in the sense that it's very clean, because it's like, it's got, you know, it's got all those fruity flavours as well in the body, but it's kind of hard to describe, like, the mouthfeel doesn't correlate to the body almost. It's like, it feels soupy, and it feels like it should be thick, but it isn't, so it's like kind of tricking my brain in that sense. It's very strange.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's just kind of like a floral lightness to it that just makes it that so it doesn't taste like viscous and heavy. It kind of like just lifts it up to make it taste, you know, maybe a bit of bitterness at the end as well.
Mm.
Like that resiny bitterness as well. Just makes it a bit more cleaner on the palate and not as heavy and dense and thick.
Mm.
It's kind of weird, but it's lovely.
Good. I mean, yeah. Weird and lovely is great.
Mm. Nice. Yeah,
I'll this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll mull over it, but it's great. Like you could easily drink this on like a, you know, especially like a hot day as well. Mm. It's just, you know, because you're not getting that like heaviness from the body, it's probably like you could drink several of these and like obviously feel it in the alcohol later on in the day, but it feels like it wouldn't get too heavy, like even after two maybe. So yeah, it's a long boy.
Mm. Nice, nice.
Yeah, not a dense boy, a long boy.
Nice.
Mm.
Good. Good.
It has the length, but not the girth. Ooh. Maybe that's what it is. Yeah.
Maybe should we talk about some games again?
Yeah.
I am probably only going to touch on the game I've been playing a little bit. I've only put about 4 hours into a game called Bulwark.
Oh. Just not
which
Final
is full title
7-2.
No. No, it's not a sequel, but actually it's part of a trilogy, so it's now been announced in games. It's called Falconeer Chronicles.
Yeah.
Or Falconeer Chronicles. The Falconeer was a game you played out
of. I was
like,
going to say, wait, actually Falconeer?
So
yeah,
it's
me
not.
We both played that.
Yeah, Bulwark is a city builder based in the same space.
Given that I really liked the lore but thought the gameplay of Falconeer was all right, that's super exciting to me, actually, because,
yes.
Well, depending on what you say, but, like, I liked that world. I didn't... So, like, I believe I played it in, like, beta or early access, and when it came out, obviously my code like rolled through, but like it wasn't sufficiently gripped by it that I ever actually played it on release. I believe that's
okay
thing.
I'm pretty sure I played it full release, but I could be wrong. Maybe,
but anyway,
but yeah, the controls were super hard to like get my
yeah
my head
it wasn't
it,
it was interesting but didn't make me want to run back to it. So as soon as I had mm-hmm. like in kind of what we were saying in the first third of the podcast, like there's nothing wrong with it, but like they're rushing back to what I knew wasn't appealing.
Sure.
Yeah. So the fact that they've like figured out that their world is cool and what if we did other things, boy, I want more developers to do that.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think because I didn't play Falconeer, and I'm coming into this kind of not necessarily fresh, but with a vague recollection of your time with it. I'm thinking, okay, I get the space, I get the kind of the aesthetic and those kinds of things. But what Bulwark is trying to do is not be a city builder in the same vein as, you know, pretty much everything
like
else
Skylines
that's kind of
city.
Out there. It's almost, and there's this little overview from the developer Thomas Sala, kind of right at the start, and he basically says, "Just play. Don't worry about stuff. Like, just be as make things as easy as possible. Make things as natural as possible. Don't try and strategize on this. Don't try and work out how to play. Just play. Just
Why
experiment.
Why do you bring this up
just,
in our bilateral conversation?
It.
This is entirely the same thing. It's like, don't fucking min max. Just play the fucking game.
Well, I mean, and it's interesting though because my experience with it, it has it has that level of wanting you to kind of be natural in the way that you approach it. So you're basically building towers because it's the idea of a falconer on the high seas. So you're building towers a lot of the time. And what a tower does is it gives you like workers of certain factions and things like that. But you also have a little bit of resource management.
Right.
So to be able to upgrade your towers, you have to collect wood, you have to collect stone, you have to collect iron. But the interesting part of this is that materials will only travel a certain distance. So when you have a stone quarry and it has the number 6 above it, that will only travel 6 paths, basically.
Oh.
So I could take it from a harbour to another harbour, and that's one.
Yeah.
Gets it to the tower that the harbour is attached to, and then it will distribute, basically, every next tower from that individual tower will be another one. So you get to a point with your settlement where that resource will not reach far enough, basically.
Right, so it's like a ripple effect, but like deprecated ripple, so you, right?
So you can't then upgrade those towers further out because the resource doesn't reach them. And this gets really into it where you start to get other little settlements that start to appear that you can bring into your peoples, let's say. So, you also have an element where you fly around in a big airship, looking at different things on the high seas, getting other ship captains to come and transport your goods and these kinds of things. But you might go over to a small island somewhere else and there's a small settlement and you get them to join you. But the only way to then make sure that you can upgrade their towers and increase their population and all that sort of stuff is by getting some of the resources from your original settlement over to them. So there is a level of strategy to it, which I think is, or it feels to me, is very important to actually progressing through the game. But the message I'm being given is just don't worry about that. Just kind of play and experiment and, build it naturally and that sort of stuff. I'm like,
How long are you into the game?
4 hours in.
Okay, I'm just wondering if this is like we're trying to handhold people who don't know this. It's like, you're foreseeing what the min-maxing is before the game wants you to care about min-maxing?
Well, there's a tutorial. I don't know how long that took, maybe 15 minutes, something like that. There's three scenarios and a free play mode.
Yeah.
And the first scenario gives you that tutorial.
Right.
So I played through that, and I played maybe another two and a half of those hours are part of that first scenario. I then jumped into the second scenario. There's no hand holding at all.
Yeah.
It just launches you straight into you having to, use the tools that you've had from that kind of tutorial and that first scenario into the second one. And almost instantly you're having to consider these things. Right? I've dropped my first tower. I can't upgrade it because I haven't got any wood. Cool. Or I can't build other towers from it because I haven't got any wood. I can't upgrade it because I haven't got any stone. I can't build foundations, which give you more houses for more population. So I need more stone. I haven't got any iron because there's no iron around. So I can't upgrade it to then and I can't remember what it's called, basically where a falconer sits and can, defend your kind of town and stuff. So it does want you to look at these resources. It wants you to figure this strategy out. It wants you to put the right ship captains because, again, when you're moving things through harbours, ship captains will only transport certain resources.
Right.
So you have to think about all of that whilst being told, don't worry about it. Just have a go.
I now get what you're saying.
Take it carefree. Yeah.
It's
but what
like,
about my poor falcons? Will they die?
Doesn't matter. They're just a resource.
No, I get attached to my falcon.
Well, you should be playing Falconeer 1 and not City Builder Falconeer because...
But that's the thing from like the first game. It's like, me and my steed.
You literally start the game and you're like, a dude on a fucking bird. And that bird is part of you. And if something happened to that bird... part of you fucking dies. Like, that's why I was super interested in this. Yeah. Like,
now they're just expendable. It's whatever.
Yeah, just like, have you played Civilization? Bucket of grain. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. And it's more in the vein of like, the first game, Falconeer, is more in the vein of like Sunless Skies, Sunless Sea sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You're playing through it's a single player experience. You make choices and they have consequences. This kind of removes that element of it. And it's very much kind of those not characters as such, but the kind of beings that are within the first game do exist within this, but actually you're kind of more of an overseer role. And actually there are then falconeers that mm-hmm. are within your settlements and stuff, yeah, which, yeah. Okay, if pirates attack, you take everyone out in your airship and you attack the pirates to stop them pillaging your trade routes and things like this. So there's kind of that, I guess, if you have an attachment to the Falconer, this kind of doesn't strip it back, it just removes it and just makes you step back slightly from that.
Yeah.
It's much
easier just being a general telling all the troops just to
yeah, very go much.
To war. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
cannon fodder.
Okay. Literally.
But it feels good. Like the one thing I will say about it is that the city building elements feel good. It's very natural.
That's great.
It is very natural in terms of those kinds of things. So if you've got a tower set up and you have all the resources that can reach that tower, you can build it up and up and up and up and up and up. And you get to a point where you're like, well, it won't build anymore. What do I need to do? I can build out some foundations. So I get some elements into the sea at the base of my tower, which build out.
Right.
And then houses appear on them. And building a couple of those allow me to go up another couple of levels. And then I can build foundations or extensions at those higher levels. Mm. So suddenly I get this tower on the side of my tower. And it visually, it's great. It looks really good in terms of just this like thing just popping up, you know, building very quickly on the side of your tower.
Yeah.
That visual representation of those kind of changes is not, cool. It's not stunning, but it's very close to that kind of like, oh, that's cool. That looks really, really cool. That coming out from the side and bursting up against the side of my tower. And I can see this that creation that I've now got of this tower. It looks completely individual to the next one that I've got, which is in a slightly different composition to this.
That's cool.
So there's that natural element to it that it isn't tower one turns into tower two, turns into tower three, turns to tower four. There is that organic nature to that kind of building element to it. And, you know, it's just understanding that perhaps this is the central tower. You want all your resources to come to that. And then all of your other towers web from that one rather than having like a chain of towers necessarily. And you bring your resource into tower one and tower 10 is just going to not get any of that. Whereas you have tower one and then a web around tower one of these kinds of things. And I absolutely. And I haven't delved into it enough to see, because there are ways to increase the number. So if you've got a six above your iron mine, building more towers around your iron mine and bringing more workers and things like that will increase that number. So suddenly that might go up to eight. So the towers in your settlement a bit further out will then be able to get that resource because it can go an extra two kind of steps.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of min-maxing to this, I think. But I guess what the developer is trying to say with that initial thing is like just yes, okay, do that, but just experiment. Just like take it easy, ease yourself into it. You're not trying to win this. There's not a win state as such for you to get to within an hour for this map. You might just play, as I have done with the first scenario, I've reset it twice, I think, where I've been doing stuff and I've played and I've experimented and stuff and then gone, oh, I don't like what I've done. And you can delete everything.
Oh,
like within the game and have the resources back and kind of start again. But
probably take more work than just starting afresh and be like,
it can do, yeah, absolutely. With my experience, I was like, I deleted a bunch of stuff and I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have deleted that much. Let's start again, get to that point quickly enough.
And clean slate,
And I've got to the point where some of the resources have depleted. And I have to move the resource extractor to another one. So again, that changes the dynamic of how far out things might be to then, you know, your trade route between to get wood from there now to your settlement is more exposed to pirates and things like that. So there's a little bit of dynamic around where things are placed as well. But it's very interesting and it is not... kind of not relaxing to just sit and kind of, you know, click these kinds of things. There's something, it does have that strategic element where you're having to think a little bit about this kind of stuff while still being kind of like a little bit carefree. Not massively, but a little bit.
Yeah, as in like, okay, my next move isn't literally going to just, you know, game over because, you know, it has some like kind of flexibility, and it's not as punishing as like some other strategy games.
Completely. Or city builders, you're like, I've changed the tax bracket on the industry areas to 11 instead of 9, and industry has just fled.
Yes.
So now I've got to change things and do stuff, and actually that's really detrimental because now all of my services are underfunded and everyone's dead. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But really, it's just about the roads. The city skylines is actually city road lines because.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's based
absolutely.
About North American cities, and North American cities care about fucking goddamn roads. Well,
and I think that's where not that I played City Skylines 2, but I think that's what they tried to address with City Skylines 2.
Yeah,
they've taken a much more European approach to the way that cities build within that space. But we haven't played that game.
Interesting.
There's literally a paper in like the presuppositions of video games. So like Civ is a great example of like colonialization, and the infinite growth model is just a presumption of the game, and it's exactly why our economy and our approach to politics is like fundamentally fucked and flawed. But you know, we don't have politics in games. But like, I've been like hesitating on this, where it's like, oh, what would a like, if you like threw out the capitalist viewpoint, what would like a 4X game or a sim builder look like? Anyway, this is sorry. I'm sidetracking us, and I'm going to stop because I don't have good answers to this. I'm just going to say this is worth thinking about.
Posit the question, and maybe one of our listeners who is developing their own 4X or city builder game might take it in that direction.
Well, that would be super interesting. Someone from a country that is not as
it doesn't even be from the country. It just needs to be like,
well, yeah, some, yeah.
What if I denied the presumptions of the shitty nation state I grew up in? Right? Like,
yeah,
really easy. We're not gonna like video games are great because you literally get to design the world and choose its rules. What's kind of sad is most video games assume the same shitty rules that are fucking everyone. And like sim games are really weird because they almost never fuck with like the basic shitty tenets of capitalism.
Those are like the things we should play the most, and fly over like Latin America and just see that it's all just like raised down for farming.
No, because
that is
almost every
really
game
eye-open.
Assumes that you can just farm indefinitely because like
what we do
in John Stuart Mill's fucking life. I'm gonna put the brakes on myself.
It's an interesting one where you get into how sim is a sim game. You know, it's kind of that point. You know, and I don't know whether even Farming Simulator wants you to rotate crops around fields, and you know, you have fallow fields and all of that sort of stuff. I've no idea. I've never played Farming Simulator, but that would be the kind of game where that would come in.
You just dump
however, with a city
in
builder,
the water's like in the UK.
Yeah, it's fine.
You got a little three-eyed fish going around. But yes, I mean, I'd be playing more Ball Walk, trying out that second scenario, trying out the third scenario as well once I've got a little bit more time into it. So yes, more to report on in a few weeks, perhaps. I've got another game I've got on the docket to put some time into, which I've got a code for, which I'll probably try and find some time over the weekend so I can talk about it next week. But, Adel, we'll come to you.
Played a game.
Potentially our final game of the episode.
It's a game I've talked about probably like a year ago, but I finally finished it.
Case of the Golden Eye.
Oh my god, got it in one! Lucy, not only
did I...
Because
I saw it pop up on Steam.
Oh, you saw it? Nice. You saw me playing it? Yeah.
And I'm like, ooh, yay!
Not only did I finish it, I bought both the DLCs and finished it. That's how much I was enjoying that fucking game.
Nice.
But also... both the DLCs were still like 10 quid or something together. Like,
Oh, were they? Okay.
Yeah, I think it was $4.99 and $4.99, so it was $9.98 total.
You get a decent amount of a few hours out.
I will say, for those of you who don't know, it's just like you basically go through a series of scenes, which might have multiple locations, and you just like, they're like reasonably static, and you like click through, and you then you can click on a person, see what they're holding, hear what they're saying at the time the scene is happening, and you
click on the words that they're talking about, and you might get clues, and you get, like, literally words. So if they say kill, that might be a word you can, like, pull from that. And then you get different clues, and then you try and deduce based on what everyone's saying and what's going on in that moment, what happened and what, like, built up to that.
Yeah, it's like the aftermath of a scene, sort of, yes. Like in...
Yeah, within, you're on the, like, last the point moment of somebody's scene.
Death or yeah. Something, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the whole game, the main game is basically that way, and you can reasonably intuit your way through things. I really liked it. I was playing with now an ex partner, and so I stopped for a while because we were trying to play it together. It's good. It's a solid game. I will say, so the original game has like 13 chapters. What I liked about the last chapter is it made you kind of go back.
Yeah.
And like
use all that prior.
You cannot solve the last chapter without going back, but obviously you've solved those things, so it's fine. I did think that there was a couple like less deductive, more inductive jumps near the end, and that's exactly what the two DLCs were. There were moments where it's like I have filled everything out to the best of my ability and I don't know what you want, and there was like, oh, but if you read this the right way, this person saying this means this other thing, and it's my only complaint is that the DLCs they had a couple moments, so it's 11 chapters on the original game, and then the two DLCs are just 3 each.
Mm-hmm.
And the DLCs just had some moments where, at least in the way I saw, like solved the original game, and I will say the last few chapters of the original game really made you like think, which I really liked because it wasn't straightforward. It was like, there's this very loose idea this person said, and like you just need to read it and then like intuit what that would mean on the other clues to figure it out. But because the way the game works is you've got like a clue screen, and it's basically like here's a bunch of like Mad Libs almost, right, where you've got some words filled in, some words missing, and the words missing will be of a certain like type, whether brown or yellow or blue. And the blue are active words, the brown are people, and the yellow are nouns that might matter or may not be people. And then what's really interesting is in the like later game and in the expansions, sometimes you get these like yellow/brown slots where you're not sure whether it's like the person or the label that they're titled with, because they're yellow/brown. And so you actually have to really stretch your brain to figure out what the game wants. But I really liked it, but I will say the DLC kind of felt like it wanted a specific answer in some spots where I don't think, given the way the rest of the game was designed, I could easily get there. I think I could get close.
Yeah, I found that too.
And then I had to kind of bash my head against it, which was, okay, to be honest, disappointing, because I think the entire of the... I struggled in the last couple scenes of the initial campaign, because there were just a couple moments where I just didn't know what the game wanted me to have. But once I understood it, I was like, oh, I see that nod. I'm okay with me not lining up with their... Because, like... Basically, the first few chapters of this game are like almost pure deduction. You have these facts, this will just be the case. But they move to like abduction at some point where you're like, you have a loose fact which says something about someone's character, and you need to like interpret that in terms of someone else being like, well, I know that they're kind of a liar, so I'm not going to like read them the right way. That's not actually a thing, but like that's like the model the game is like pushing towards, where there isn't a clean deductive answer, which I actually like about the game. But it just felt like the last two chapters of the main campaign and then the two the entirety of the two DLCs really were making you stretch, but I felt there was a couple times where it was like, I actually have read all these clues and I'm not sure, but I know that it's either of these three characters that they want me to figure out this. And so when I like fill all the slots and says, basically, when you fill out all the spots, you get one of three results. One is red. It says you're just wrong. There's just too many things wrong on your Mad Libs. Two, it goes green and everything's right. And three, up to two of the things that you've filled in are wrong and it goes yellow. And so for most of the primary campaign on Case of the Golden Idol, I hit the yellow infrequently, but sometimes. And then I like shovel things around and it was fine. What I like about the game is like often it's like steal or take, like stealing life force or taking life force are the game knows they're synonymous and doesn't penalize you for like whatever they want. But in the in the latter part of the game, it felt like I was kind of playing the card shuffling where it's like, I know the, so because it's like a, there's sections of the screen which are different clue sets, and it only like will give you a red, green, or yellow result if you filled out all of the things in that clue set. And sometimes it's like four clues, and sometimes it's like 15. And so I felt like often in the latter parts of the game, I was getting red, but then I like swapped to what I didn't have a clear idea of why, but like I knew it was either this person or this person. And then as soon as I got the yellow, then it was like, okay, now I'm just playing find the bit that I'm wrong about, because if I got yellow, I know only two of these are wrong. Yeah. And so I can literally just like put something random in a spot to figure out whether it's right. That makes sense. Like I know the dynamics of the game. So if I'm at only two are wrong, then if I put something random in this spot and it's wrong, it's that one's right. So now I'm just compressing the like answer space by like putting bullshit in, because
yeah, it's process of elimination.
Yeah, but the problem was the
you never want it to be reduced.
Yeah, and the rest of the game never made me feel like I was doing this kind of like min-maxy kind of like I'm not sure what I'm doing, because I literally like I read all the stuff. And I get it. Like, I missed a couple, like, light touch clues. But something about the DLCs on, again, it's three scenes per DLC. And so in all six of them, I definitely hit that moment where in the 11 scenes of the original game, I kind of didn't until the very end. And I just felt like it was... Yeah, it was just really sad because I liked the game a lot. I bought the DLC. I'm happy for the developer to have that money. But, like, it felt like they had a notion of what I should be thinking and didn't consider...
An alternative.
Yeah, the alternatives were the why I fell in love with the game was, like, oh, those alternatives kind of had to fall away based on, like, deductive bits.
Yeah, I think I didn't quite hit as many snags as you did with the DLC, but I certainly hit a few in them. And
it wasn't like every level, but it was like, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm just saying in them.
But I'm with you on that, yeah, because I did hit those snags now and then, and I think it's because the game is set in like complete, you know, fantasy. It's like, you know, alchemic fantasy, like sort of like. Somewhat grounded in reality, but has some like kind of fantastical elements, sort of like, I don't know, Indiana Jones or something like that. It's a testament when it works, and it's like I can follow this very kind of like out there and absurd at times, like narrative thread. But at the same time, it can also work against it, and you are just like sometimes like a bit like ooh. It could be this, it could be that, and it's like, you know, I'm not quite following on your, you know, narrative thread, because it is a bit fantastical. It is a bit, you know, down to interpretation, because it's not like set in stone, you know.
Yeah, I think it's
fact. It's more fictional, and
it's not,
you know,
even the fiction
based
part. It was just like the mm-hmm. the clues were a little looser, and I
yeah.
So I think if the game was if I just walked into DLC and had to like, so if it was an abduction game, or like abduction is literally you don't get to, you just like inferences to the best explanation. And so these little things matter. I fucking don't mind that. I think that's actually a really cool notion of a game. The problem was mm-hmm. the first like 2/3 of the main campaign were almost purely deductive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what my problem kind of was like you kind of changed lanes without signaling on a core mechanic. So I was expecting to get enough information to figure this out. And so when I like said, given all the information, this is what happens, and you're saying no, and then I'm like, oh, well, there's this like kind of hazy fact over here, and if I read that
yes.
in a certain way, oh, now you're giving me the green thing. And I was like, oh, but that's not how mm-hmm. you've run the game. Basically, it's that consistency thing. It'd be kind of like...
Yeah, I agree.
If we call back to that Bellatro conversation, it'd be kind of like if one of the Jokers suddenly was just like, I'm giving you the answer, right? This is the best mm-hmm. move. Like, you just start... Like, if you suddenly started getting highlighted, the like, this is the best hand, even the whole game up until this point was like making you have to think about it.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of was... disappointed on. What I will say yeah. is I really, really like how the narrative of the Golden Idol and its powers and its like path through people in their history and in geography.
Yeah.
Like all of that is super interesting and it's like a compelling narrative, and it's all what I like about it is it's done through small like moments in whatever space yeah. that like the DLC happens Holding or the main thing happens. Yeah. Yeah. But you get a sense of this travel of the Golden Idol. And so like the sequel has been announced, and its trailer has like a room with the telltale like red string. And I really yeah. hope yeah. it's like a really dynamic through history thing, where you kind of have to worry about the depth of the red string somehow, because this is what I like about this series is, and like the DLC was fine, but it let me down because it wasn't as tight as the main campaign felt. But this okay. new thing seems really interesting. Because
yeah, I think
maybe they can possibly, make up for it.
Yeah, I think possibly what the folly of the thread was is that, you know, when you're, like, working through those chapters, maybe the developer thought, you get this right, you're on this narrative thread.
Yeah.
But every single chapter is a new revelation and yeah. a new part of that narrative. And maybe they thought, you know all this, right? You're in our headspace. It's like, no, you still have to explain to yeah. the player, like, explicitly that this is this. And that's maybe where a bit of the vagueness comes from. But I
still enjoyed the
one
whole
or two
thing.
Issues yeah. And it's like
I just was disappointed that
it's very hard
vaguer.
It's very difficult yeah. yeah. Even something like Overdin is like you can also not be on the same wavelength as Lucas Pope like 100% of the time. There's always going to be those discrepancies
yeah.
where you're not quite following the thread, and that's fine, especially when you're successful in that even 75% of the time. It's like still a very good game, but yeah, hopefully they fine-tune that. I hope they don't dumb it down, because I think it's a Netflix joint.
Yeah.
Yes. So I hope they don't dumb it down to the like you know, this is that, which
oh no, it won't, you know, it won't be dumbed down, this is that. It'll just be like, oh, you have
not
to
watch, that extent,
you
just but like
have to watch yeah. episode 72 of anime 74 and then also the season 3 episode 19 of the yeah. American Office.
I hope it's the exact same game, but just yeah. like a different. I like that they kept this like really ugly art
style. So what I really like about the trailer about So one of the reasons I wanted to bring it up, was that like the new trailer came out, was it's taking place in the 70s, but it still has this like, it's like the crappy art style from the original game, but a bit, but actually 3D.
3D.
Yeah.
But like still just as kind of janky. So like, it's like 3D clay figures kind of.
Yeah. Oh, it's got more of a look of like Broken Age or something like that. Not quite Broken Age.
More,
but
it's like
getting to
Broken
that.
Squared Age. Like it's just like it's not great looking. And I kind of like that.
I love that. I love that.
But like that's why I'm like kind of excited about it, because it was like, oh, we've got funding and we're like, even if it's just the same thing, but like your clue screen has the red line. Sort of the red string thing. The fact that the trailer shows that that red string has depth just makes me think that they're like thinking orthogonally about this. And like, again, my biggest critique is the DLC felt like it wanted more than it was giving. Like it wanted you to make intuitive leaps that weren't earned. But if the people who are like hoping that people are doing those jumps then get like a flush with cash from Netflix and have a like an entire medium to help guide people, like I said, like a new degree, like actual depth, literal depth to like guide the player in. Oh, I'm super, super chuffed.
Yeah.
This was like kind of a slam dunk, even though I was disappointed, I guess is kind of my take.
I'm glad you played it and finished it. That's really good.
But I will say, I like the main campaign so much that I just literally threw 10 quid and immediately bought the two. I've been marking all week, and after marking like for a couple hours, I would just like I would literally open the game and just try and solve a mystery, and if I couldn't figure it out right away, I would close it out and then go back to marking, and then like I'd come back. It's a really good game for like just like drifting in and out,
bite-sized, chunks. Yeah,
I'm going to have to end us there for the evening. Because I hear small children making lots of noise. So I might have to defer our quiz to next week, Lucy. So the games that have been earmarked for today, get them ready for next week instead. To round out our episode, are there any final comments anyone wants to have on the beers that they have drank?
Not beers, but play Botany Manor. You got a week before I spill all, tell all, expose.
Of my Brussels adjacent beers, the second one's just like much more craft appealable. It's really good. I will say the tangerine element kind of like tapers off a bit, so it just feels more citrusy, which I think is good to finish it off. Pretty drinkable. Would recommend it.
Nice.
Good.
Mine just two very good beers. The best way I can describe this long boy is, you know, you're having something sinful, but it still tastes quite light. Maybe like a lemon and orange cheesecake.
Amazing.
I don't know. And the Atom's great. Just two very good breweries. Thoroughly enjoyed them both. Especially the fact that the long boy is 500 mils, so I'm still drinking it.
Nice.
Which is always nice.
Good.
Yeah.
Double IPA, that's 500 mils. That should be a standard.
Yes, agreed.
Absolutely.
440
Oh, mate, we need to go back to Wiper and True 500 mil bottles and Beer Chemistry 500 mil bottles and stuff. Let's just go back like 6 years, please. If you'd like to go back 6 years on the podcast, you can do that on your podcast service of choice. We have episodes from 6 years ago when we talk about these ridiculous sized beers. But if you want to know everything about Tanked Up more recently, we're at Tanked Up Cast on the socials, and you can go to outofflies.net to look at all of our recent episodes, including the video versions where you can see the beers that we're drinking as well. Or where we do have a quiz, the cover that Lucy holds up of the game case.
I thought you were saying the spills that we've been having.
Well, and the spills. spills. Yes, always the spills. Yeah. But Outlives on that has a bunch of you know, indie game reviews from Lee recently. He's been on a roll.
Yeah.
And a lot of
good work.
Kind of film and TV chats from Kyle over there a lot as well. We are, as I said, collectively at Tanks and Cast on the socials. I'm at Nova_47. Lucy is
JuicyLoose9.
And Adel is
at the Omniarch.
And I think that's pretty much everything for this week. Yeah. So you probably want to tune in next week to hear about Botany Manor, hear about any other games that we have been playing, and the beers that will appear for next week as well. But for this week, we've been Tanked Up. Thank you for joining us. Goodbye.
Adios.
Ciao.
www.outoflives.net